Hi, I'm Melissa Gerson. I'm CEO and founder of Tranquilo, and I'm here talking with Derek Champlain about my entrepreneurial journey.
Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. The following interview is designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be. Your host, Derek Champlain, is the founder and CEO of The Artist Evolution, a full-service agency building successful brands, marketing tools, and campaigns, and also the author of the best-selling book, Don't Buy a Duck. And now, let's begin today's Leadership Series interview.
Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where our goal is to inspire you to become the best leader that you can be. We've got Melissa Gerson with us today. She's the founder and CEO of Tranquilo Mat. Melissa, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Derek.
You've had quite a ride, quite a journey. You've appeared on Shark Tank, the TV show, and quite a big journey you've had before that. You have even been referred to as the crying baby specialist. So I would love to hear, a lot of our listeners are going to perk up when they hear that. And so please give me a little bit of your backstory and tell us a little bit about the journey that got you to where you are today.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm a maternity nurse. I graduated from nursing school. I went back to school to become a nurse. I graduated in 2010, and I was really lucky enough to get a job straight out of school in the specialty that I wanted, which was maternity. And I worked for a hospital called Tufts Medical Center here in Boston. I kind of learned the ropes across all sorts of different maternity aspects. So there's labor and delivery. There's also the mother-baby unit after women have had their baby, they stay at the hospital for a few days. And then there's also women that are often on what's called an antepartum unit who are in, like, still pregnant, but waiting in the hospital to have their baby because there's some complications. So I kind of learned the ropes through that. That job, I was really fortunate in the first 6 months as part of my training, there was an opportunity to go to a Massachusetts Department of Public Health workshop, I guess it would be a great way to phrase that. It was a one-day kind of course. And with that, I became what was called an infant crying specialist. We learned about kind of how to stop shaken baby syndrome, which is obviously a big problem. And one of the prerequisites of the course was to take a Happiest Baby Educator. Happiest Baby on the Block is a very famous book written by the pediatrician Harvey Karp and his theories that babies miss being inside the womb. And that's why they, quote, cry for no reason type of thing. So that was, it's like a 200 and some odd page book. So we had to read that. We had to, there was some DVD and some additional work. And I became, you know, an educator for that program, but then also attended this special workshop with the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. And that's how I became that infant crying specialist. So I brought that back to the hospital where I was working. And it's funny because I was actually educating a lot of the nurses that were there. Most people know that babies like to be swaddled. So I wasn't really educating on that, but constant motion and constant sound were two big things that, every time I was providing the loud shh, like the heartbeat that they're experiencing in the womb, it's as loud as a vacuum cleaner. So every time I was doing that in a baby's ear, I was going shh right in their ear. And the nurses were like, you can't do that. You're going to make them deaf. So I ended up having to give a lot of education. And fortunately, through the trainings I had done, you know, I had some literature that was like, nope, see, here's the proof that the womb is, 80 to 90 decibels. A baby's cry is 110 to 120. And they're crying in their own ear, right? So they're hearing it louder than you are. So they actually need something quite loud to kind of stop them from crying. So I would use that, and they would stop. And then the nurses started to be like, okay, maybe you're onto something. So then I kind of earned the nickname a little bit of the baby whisperer. But I certainly don't in any way take credit for that. But yeah, I ended up getting some of the toughest cases at the hospital. Constant motion was another one of them, because a lot of people assume that babies just like to be rocked slowly, and they'll do that kind of thing. And I would, do like kind of a vigorous motion of movement. Of course, baby's head would have to be in line with their body, so that they're well supported and they're not going to get whiplash, or what's considered shaken baby, when their head is kind of, not in line with their body and they're being shaken to and fro. But I was supporting them them and having them in this nice supportive position and just, you know, almost like you're running for the bus or you're in a workout class. And I would do that. And they're like, you can't do that. You're shaking the baby. So again, I would have to educate the nurses and the parents, but it worked. So, you know, those were the types of things that I was learning and doing. Yeah. And then all of that obviously led to, you know, the idea that just kind of came to me in the middle of the night with multiple babies that were crying that I was given, like, hey, we've got a bunch of babies, you know, two couple of them I couldn't pick up because they were undergoing medical treatments. And that made it even more difficult. So I was like using my hands and feet to like rock their bassinets or their warmers. And I was going, shh, at full volume. And about 5 minutes later, I was like, this is ridiculous. There has to be a better way to make all of these things have the constant motion and sound that babies miss. And lightning bolt. And that's the beginning of the beginning.
Wow. So first of all, I'm trying to picture the whole thing. Was this like late at night and you've got like 10, 15 babies you're trying to take care of? Or
yep. So we had different assignments at the hospital, and usually you'd have a couple, you know, I'd be assigned to four patients, and they would usually have a baby accompany them. But occasionally you would just be assigned to the nursery. Okay. So if that's the case, you know, most of the babies would be rooming in with mom, but if they're super cranky or, you know, mom's sick or just needing a little bit extra shut eye, sometimes they would come in. So yeah, I was at some point during that shift, either responsible for being the nursery nurse for the whole night or just for that part of it. And I just had a couple of really fussy kids at the time. And we had a swing in the nursery, just like a standard baby swing in there. And I had my phone with an app on, and it was just playing the shushing, but it was like across the room and it was already in use. And so that limited, you know, I was like, well, and some of these kids, like I said, couldn't be picked up, so they couldn't go into the swing because they were undergoing like phototherapy for jaundice or had IVs, things like that, that made it more complicated. So even if that were an option, it wasn't going to be great because it wasn't going to be able to go into their bassinets or their warmers.
You're passionate. You were already passionate about what you were doing, the career and the field you were going into. You saw a need here. You've kind of ahead of your field as far as what works and some techniques that work that, I don't know, I guess they were almost controversial if people were looking at you going, what are you doing? And then you had a light bulb moment. But you know, people have those sometimes. They're not always good ideas. But most people don't act on them. So I got to ask, how did you go from being that person that was in, I mean, you weren't a serial entrepreneur, correct?
No.
Okay, so that fascinates me even more. So tell me, so what made you actually take action? I want our listeners to hear, especially if they have this lightning bolt idea that they've got to follow up on that. What possessed you to go to the next step and actually start exploring and taking the next step with this?
Yeah. So, to be honest, truly honest, I didn't want to start a business. I had no desire, you know, just like so many people out there, I had this idea and I was like, yeah, that's great. But like, I don't know any inventors. I don't know any, you know, I didn't know any business owners. I didn't know anyone who'd invented something or sold it on the market. So I was like, well, that's great. But like, what do you do with it? Right. And so it was one of those, like, I was just like, great. And put it and just kind of forgot about it, you know, or like I mentioned it to people and they're like, yep, good idea. But that's as far as it went. And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, a month or two later, one of my colleagues was like, oh, there's a department at the hospital. Cause it was part of Tufts University. They're associated with the hospital I was working for. So they had there was a person at the university that was part of, intellectual property department.
Oh, wow.
And it was like a single guy, you know, in an office. And they were like, there's this office, you should call them and see what's up. So did a little bit of digging, called up, you know, guy said, here's this application, fill it out. So, you know, I was like, okay. So it was like, it kind of came piecemeal. Like there would be things that would happen or that I would be informed that I could do. And I would do it just so that the idea would kind of like leave me alone, so to speak. Sure. I was like, yeah, that's great. So I applied. I heard a few months later from this guy and, you know, we had a conversation and fortunately for me now it was in writing. At the time I was devastated, but this guy was like, yeah, that's not a good idea. We're not interested. It's not even patentable. Good luck.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. you know, I was like, that sucks. And I thought the dream was dead, so to speak. I was like, well, you know, I gave it my best shot. That's that. And then a few months later, I was no longer working at that hospital. I was working now, part-time at one hospital, part-time at another. Had the same problem come up. This is like 3 or 4 months later. And I was like, oh, so this idea. So I mentioned the idea that the nurse is there, and they're like, yeah, that's a good idea. And I was like, okay, so now what? So that was when, you know, I don't even remember how it happened, but I like started taking books out of the library on how to do a provisional patent. Wow. You know, just started like looking up on the, and it was one of those, like, you know, somebody would mention, oh, well, you should look up, you know, a provisional patent. It's, you can file them really cheaply for, you know, in a day. And I would like, oh, okay. But it was like the information would come to me kind of piecemeal, like when I needed it. Right. And then I would hit a wall, or I would, you know, life would get busy. I'd be working a bunch of shifts, or I would, you know, it was my friend's wedding or whatever, and I'm just busy. And I would kind of put it down and forget about it. And then a few months later, it would be like knocking on the back of my brain, like, hey, remember me, friend? And I'd be like, oh, yeah, what do you want now? Like, I thought we did this. And so, yeah, just kind of kept working from there. Then I ended up building, like going to Radio Shack, because then it was like, well, how would you make something like this? How do things vibrate anyway? So then I was just following my curiosity of like, well, how do you make something vibrate? And so I started taking things apart at home that vibrated and trying to figure out how they worked. Started going to Radio Shack at the time and like, you know, buying things and like talking, because people will talk to you, be like, hey, I'm trying to make this thing. And they'd be like, well, you need a soldering gun and you need this. And then I would, you know, Google how to solder things. Thank God for Google and YouTube videos these days. Right. Yeah. And then I built two prototypes. I built more than that, but I built two specifically that I then tested. Like I asked my friends, I was like, hey, I have this idea. And I was super shy about it. I was like, so I have this idea and I'm like, not even sure it's going to work or what's going to happen. But, you know, like, and I kind of made these two things myself and they're electronic and they run on batteries. Like, can we try it on your baby? And I was like, pretty sure they would all say no. Cause I didn't even know if they were safe or like, you know, if they, like one of them actually at that one overheated because I, you know, I soldered it together myself and I didn't really, Google didn't cover, you know, advanced circuitry. So
and it probably wasn't a polished prototype either, was it?
No, not at all. It was like, there was like duct tape.
That's
like,
great.
It was love like, it. Yeah. And friends were all like, sure. That's yeah. Sounds great. And their kids these days are like 4, I think. But I could not believe that these people said yes to me. I was like, okay. Right. And then we tried it and it was shocking, you know, because you can't really, well, you can make a baby cry on demand if you want to test something out, but that's mean. Right. And I don't subscribe to, you know, we just kind of waited until the baby cried for something. And oftentimes they would cry because they were hungry or they needed a diaper change. And, you know, we would try it and they would stop crying like almost instantly. And wow. They would, you know, they would stop crying for a bit of time. If there's something wrong, like if they need to eat, they're going to cry again because they actually still need to eat. Right. You didn't solve the problem, but it was just really incredible to watch. And that was when I was like, huh, maybe I'll do something with this. Maybe this is a thing that I can do. And then I got like kind of, I would say, tangled up with a company because then somebody mentioned, oh, you should license it. Mm. So licensing is you have an idea, you've got a, you know, a patent pending, and you end up, you know, trying to get it licensed so that somebody else pays for your patent, you know, creates the product, markets the product, holds the inventory, pays the warehouse to ship it to the customers, etc. Like they undergo all of that risk, right. And you get a percentage of their net profit. And so I got entangled with a company that was like, we'll help you. We're going to license it for you. And so I signed a contract with them. And it was like the minute I signed the contract, they went like radio silent. And it was like trying to like hunt everyone down of, you know, who can I talk to? Who that, you know, what's going on? Who did you talk to? And it was always, yeah, everyone loves it. It's great. We're having great conversations. Well, who are you talking to?
Right.
And they could never tell me. They couldn't give me details. And I just started after a few months. I was like, I smell a dead rat. Like, this is not right. And I ended up impressing them. So part of what they wanted me to do for them too was like videos proving that this worked. So this was another instance where I was like, okay, friends, like, please have me over to your house and let me use this on your babies. And one of my friends was awesome. There were like four or five moms with babies of different ages. And we tried it out on all types. We tried it with older babies on tummy time, you know, and it got like 10 or 15 extra minutes of tummy time. We had another kid that needed to go down for a nap, but their mom, you know, has a toddler. So she's like, it's always a struggle to get him to go down quickly for a nap and try to, you know, take care of my toddler. So we tried it in that situation. And the one that stuck out the most for me, and we had all of this on video and it was great. And I submitted it to this company that was going to help me license it. The best video was this one kid who hated his car seat. Like the minute his butt hit his car seat, he would just scream at the top of his lungs. Mm. And his mother was like, he does that on 5-minute car rides or like 5-hour car rides. And it's torture. Mm. And we put him in his car seat. Sure enough, he started to cry. We buckled him in, still crying, put the mat on top of him, still crying. We turned the mat on, stops.
Wow.
And his mother was like, I will give you $100 right now for this. And of course, that was the one that I had like soldered myself that like overheated after like 5 or 10 minutes. And I was like, I can't give you this like duct taped prototype. Like that's just not going to fly. But that's when I knew I was onto something. So I was super excited about this, gave it to the company that was like, yeah, we're going to license it for you. It's going to be awesome. Came to find out, like I said, 3 or 4 months later, when they like were not giving me any information, that they lost that video, that some employee that I gave it to put it on her personal computer, not on the work computer. She didn't work there anymore, et cetera, et cetera. So again, I was devastated. I was like, oh my God. But come to find out that was a breach of contract.
Oh, that's great.
They lost my IP. So I could like, so I was like, oh my God, this is great. Like, so I talked to my lawyer and she's like, yep, you can get out of it now. And I was like, yes, thank God. Wow. So, you know, everything happened for a reason for sure. So I got out of that and was kind of gun shy for a little while there. I was like, okay, I'm going to go about my life for a little bit. And ended up then being like, okay, well, I'm going to go directly to the companies that are going to like want to license it. I'm not going to deal with like a third party who's going to talk to, you know, Fisher-Price or Graco or these other big kind of like baby industry companies. So I'm going to go straight to them. And I started looking. So I spent an entire summer, you know, Googling these different companies, and a couple of them had forms that you could submit your information. And one of them was, Summer Infant. And they were in Rhode Island, which was pretty close by. And I heard back from them and they were like, yeah, we're not interested. And I was like, okay. But a lot of the bigger companies like Fisher Price and Graco have things right on their website. Like, please submit an idea, but like, it's our IP the minute you submit it. Like, we're not going to pay you any royalties. Like, for, and I was like, oh, heck no. So never submitted to them in any way. But it was a lot of just like digging that summer and filling out the few applications I could find to get bigger companies to listen to me, and just a bunch of doors closed in my face. And same thing, I was like, oh, I guess the idea's over. I guess the deal's done. You know, I'm toast. And put it down for a little while. And then a few months later, this little bugger just would not leave me alone. A few months later, I was found out that one of my favorite jobs, I was working at the two jobs still, and my favorite of the two was not going to be able to work there anymore, because the full-time nurses, they were undergoing a reorganization, and they just weren't going to need the ancillary staff anymore. So I was kind of, I wasn't told that there would be no shifts, but it was pretty much like, yeah, the chances of you working here anytime in the next 3 months are as good as done just getting shifts in any way. And I needed money. So I was like, oh, and I was so bummed. And I remember this woman asked me, she was just very point blank, a friend was just like, well, you know, that sucks. It's your favorite job. But like, you know, if money were no object and you knew you could never fail, what would you do? And I was just like, I would work on my invention. And I knew that, like, I started crying when I answered, because I just knew, like, deep in my bones that that's what I had to do. So that kind of started, and it was equal parts like exciting, because like, this is super cool. Like it it's interesting to me to like be Googling how circuitry worked. Right. So I was like excited for the process, but terrified because like I've never owned a business before. I've never, never pitched my product to sharks before, you know, none of this. So I was just all of that combined, but I knew that I had to try. Because if I didn't try, like, you know, I'd be lying on my deathbed, you know, 10 years, 20, 50 years, whatever, however many years, whenever that time came, and I would regret like not having seen this through, like really, truly like seen it through. And so that really, I would say, started my, like, I was like, I'm doing this. And I was like, you know, I didn't put it down from then on out.
So give me a timeline. How long, first of all, great story so far. I love it. You know, you kept trying to put this thing down. It kept coming back and you kept hitting obstacles and you kept picking it back up. A lot of things worth having are like that. They don't always just come easily. How much time did you have as far as a timeline? Was it months? Was it years from the day you had the idea until you said, I'm going to go all in on this?
Yeah. So I remember I had the idea, I would say like early fall, so maybe August or September 2011. Okay. And then the point where I was like, I am all in was January or February 2014. So like 3 years.
Wow.
Not even like 2.5, but still like a long time. Of just, you know, just little bits here and there. And of course I needed to go through all of those journeys, you know, to hit those brick walls and know that they weren't options. And best part was in 2015 when I went to, there's this big industry trade show called ABC Kids Expo in Las Vegas every year. Hmm. And so I went to that as part of the Invention Connection. And at that point I had a bunch of actually commercial grade prototypes. Okay. At that point, and we had started our safety testing, because that was another thing, like, okay, I've got commercial grade things, but like I've got commercial grade samples, but it's a baby product. There are safety regulations. Like, what are those? And I had to like do a lot of research and digging and talk to experts and figure out what that was. And then who could test it for me and how does that work? So, you know, it was just a whole process. And so we had done like an Indiegogo Kickstarter, and I didn't even really like, I didn't know about, you should have this email list, you should send it out to people, you should market it for like a year beforehand, you know, run some ads so you get people's emails so you actually like hit your goal. I was just like, okay, we set up a Facebook page like last week, like let's start my Indiegogo campaign. Right. And we did pretty well, but we did not hit our $50,000 goal at all. We got like, I think, just shy of $4,000 in orders, like 3,800 or something. And it was great because we sold like 50, I think we had 50 customers and like 80 units that were sold, and they were all pre-sales, and a lot of them were like friends or friends of friends or, you know, former nursing professors or just people who like I hadn't really heard from in a long period of time, but it was great to see them supporting me and like, you know, putting their money on the line for something that didn't exist yet.
Right.
But I had the commercial grade samples and we were starting the testing and that was all great. And October rolls around and I go to this trade show and Summer Infant CEO and Summer, like, so the people who had told me, like, I sent this form in and, you know, went to somebody in some office who said, we're not interested. Somebody else from their organization, the CEO, stopped by and was like, who told you that? Like, that's a shame. We love this. Like, and I remember, I didn't even mean to, but it was one of those, like, we were having a very genuine conversation and he was genuinely like, I cannot believe we turned this down. Like, we need to start talking again. And I laughed at him just because it was such a funny situation. I was just like, I was like, well, now if you want it, you're going to have to pay me a lot more for it. And I don't know where those words came from, but they were so true. But it was just one of those, like, I was like, yes, that's what I needed. Right. Like, right. I needed to hear that. So that was quite a journey. And even technically I'm at this trade show and I'm in the middle of, so the Indiegogo campaign was like August 2015. We had all of our samples. We started our safety testing September. It was like Labor Day weekend. I was like, yes, I'm actually going to go to the beach this weekend and like enjoy the day or so, you know, something like I'm an entrepreneur, but I'm going to have a day off.
Right.
And long story short, I got notification from our supplier that like the manufacturer we were working with was going out of business and they couldn't accept our order, which was good. We hadn't paid our deposit yet, but like
the factory we had found to make the product that we were currently undergoing safety testing with, like paying thousands of dollars to get safety tested, couldn't work with us. So we were pretty much back at square one.
Wow.
And then we found out that the factory that we had been working with at that time that was going out of business, like, lied to us anyway. And it was supposed to pass all these various safety things, and it didn't pass like half of them because they either lied to us or just had no idea what they were doing. So it was good that that happened. But I was like freaking out that I'm like, okay, it took us like, you know, 9 months or 10 months, whatever it was, to get to this point. Right. Now I have like 50 customers and like, I'm going to have to see them again. And like, what am I going to say? Cause I don't have product for them.
I mean, I see a central theme here again. If you know, you're told in the beginning that it was not a good idea by somebody that was a professional. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't always listen to that. I'm a consultant. I do hope people listen to me sometimes when I have input. But and then you had partners or a company that was supposed to help you, and they didn't deliver. And then you've had several of the roadblocks. We've got a Kickstarter campaign we're involved in that's not doing really well. And you know, and I hope that the inventor doesn't get done with that and go, you know, I'm done. That was just a tiny part of your journey. You had a manufacturer going out of business. I mean, you've had all these challenges, but you've had this drive, and this has been your baby, and this has been something that you believe in, and you continue to push and get it out there. What's the drive? What was your drive behind continuing?
Well, when I have this factory telling me that they're not that they're closing, excuse me, and I've got all these orders, that drive was like, I can't look, you know, my aunt in the face at Christmas. And like, you know, so right. Like, I got to get her something.
Right.
That was that drive. It was like sheer embarrassment, I would almost say, or like fear of, you know, embarrassment in front of people that you cared about, or right. like feeling guilty that you've kind of screwed them over or something.
They invested, you know, something in you too. And a lot of us small Correct. Business owners, so can, like, we can relate to that. Our family and our friends and our contacts, they give a lot sometimes to believe in us. You don't want to oversell that, especially over a long journey. And then when it comes time to deliver, not be able to. I mean, you'll do whatever you have to come up with that product.
Exactly.
If you have opened your own manufacturing plant, you'll figure out a way.
Exactly. So, you know, so I was like, forget it. I'm like, we're doing this. So we fortunately found another factory. Like, it was funny because the first time, and that's another thing that I would definitely like encourage. So whoever that person is who's got a Kickstarter that's not going well, like, do not give up. Right. But I would certainly say that, like, it took me nine months or so to find the factory and to get to the testing portion the first time. And then another month or two to get that testing together. And then it turns out that the second time I did it, you know, the second time you do something, it's faster. So it only took right. like 3 months, I think, total. So this was September 5th, I think. I can almost remember the date. It was crazy. I don't know if that was exactly the date, but it was Labor Day weekend, 2015. This is happening. So it's September sometime. And then we ended up getting product. Technically, it was advanced samples, but it was product. It was things that I could give to people who had paid me money that were functional and safe and safety tested. So we bought like 85 units, and those I received. It was like the Saturday, I want to say, like the 12th or something of December of 2015. So it's like, or we got it Friday, and we were packaging them all up on a Friday. And Saturday morning, I like show up at my local post office with like, you know, 50 packages, and the people behind me in line hated me because they're like, we want to just send one or two Christmas packages, and I've got like 50.
But what a journey this is for you. When I think about it, I've had several companies. We work with a bunch of clients and help them launch products. And so we get to see things come to fruition pretty quickly. And it's hard to be patient, but here you are, you know, this is going over 4 years and now your first product's going out. You had to wait four Yes. years from idea to actually putting that in the mail. That's an exciting time. It's hard for me to wait 4 minutes for something. So to wait 4 years, we're just impatient people. So, you know, a lot of people, if they don't get to make the product or do something quickly enough, they either move on to something else. Sometimes that's the right thing to do, but not always, because products like yours, they take patience. And we interviewed somebody that had 10 years in before they saw the fruition on it. And now it's changing the world. And so I love your story. So keep going on now the now take me now on the journey of, okay, now you got your first product out, and let's hear some success of, I mean, you went all the way to Shark Tank, and then it started happening pretty quickly.
Well, yeah. So we're still, that Shark Tank though was this year. So
right. Yeah, we got a couple of years still.
So yeah, so 2015, we got product out. This is December. We are in progress though. So the 85 units arrived. They got shipped out to the early backers, I guess you call it. And we're in progress now for 2,000 units. Mass production, that was what's considered our minimum order quantity. And, you know, we're in production for that, and they're due to be completed kind of like mid-January and delivered in early February. So, So we're in progress for that. I go over to China, which is where we're manufacturing. I meet with the factory. I tour everything. Everything's looking great. I'm super excited. Like, I had tears in my eyes when I was in that factory, and I got to like talk to some of the people on the line, and I was just like, thank you so much for what you're doing. Like, I can't even begin to tell you what this means to me and how this is going to help people. And thank you. You know, I was just like, I'm getting choked up thinking about it, but I was like, I have pictures of me, like, I was excited. I was like, can I solder that, you know, chip onto the thing? You know, with like, I'll have somebody like watching me, you know. Like,
you know how to solder now too, after this many years, right?
Exactly. So, but yeah, and I was just so excited to like see that. And it was like seeing your baby for the first time is like what that kind of, I mean, it's not right. I don't want to belittle anyone's experience, but for me, it was like a lot of hard work, and I was just so grateful. So I got to do that. And then I came home. Had 2,000 units arrive. That was definitely February 5th of 2016. And so I'm like, great, we've got product. Now I'm going to tell all the press. Everyone's going to cover us. And we're just going to sell this, and it's going to be great.
Right.
And sure, we worked with some influencers. And I think our first month we worked with this guy. His name is Jamie Grayson. He has he's called the Baby Guy, and his Facebook is like Baby Guy in New York City. And he's like a really big influencer. He's had a few viral videos, you know, so he's got like, at the time he had like 300,000 followers. So I was like, yes, like we're on his page. It's going to be awesome. And you know, we did great. Like we went from January before it was still pre-sales on our website. We had like 10 orders, and I was even excited about 10 orders in 2016 because, you know, August we did like essentially. So then September, the Kickstarter ended, and we're back on pre-sale or whatever on our website, and we did like 3 units, right? And so by January we're doing 10, and I only know one of the 10 people versus like our Kickstarter where it's like, I pretty much knew everyone except maybe one person.
Right. And that's the comment we heard too on this Kickstarter campaign. It's all family and friends. I'm like, yep, that's kind of how it starts. That's the way it works.
Yep. So then I had that one person that wasn't, and I was like, I was excited for that one person that wasn't family, you know? And then in January, like what, 3-4 months later, I'm like, wow, it's like 9 strangers. Like, I have no idea how they found me, but that's so exciting. And I think we did like just under $1,000 in sales for that month. And I was like, $1,000. That's awesome. Like, this is so great. Still a drop in the bucket. You know, that was like barely covering costs of anything because websites cost things to design, like all sorts of stuff. And, and then February things arrive, and we work with this influencer, and I'm excited. And, you know, we moved like 60 units that month, and that's amazing.
Wow.
Like
that is 10 amazing.
To 60, you know, and we did, I want to say like, yeah, we did like $6,000 or $7,000 in sales that month.
That's
and
a huge just, jump. Like, we were
exactly. But I didn't know what marketing was all about. So like we had that one month and then it was like, you know, we did like 1,200 or 1,500, and I was like, what happened, you know? And then it was like, oh, you have to do another thing. So it was like, you know, and then I was like sending things out to press, and like one of like, you know, a dozen covered me, and I was like excited about that, but I was like, you know, where are the masses? Why are they not flocking to me, you know? It was like, I was very impatient. I was like, what do you mean? Like, I've got product now, I need to sell it. Like, I've got 2,000 units.
Now, did you have a warehouse, or was this all going from the house? I mean, what was your warehouse kind of stuff?
So we work with a pack and pick. At that particular time, I was, it was a friend, or it was a friend's fiance who ran an Amazon business, had his warehouse, and he was selling for us on Amazon. And it was kind of one of those like, well, I'll help you, you help me, free warehousing, you know, that kind of thing. And that was great at the time. Long story short, that whole relationship just didn't work out, and it was, you know, it was again for the best. But it was one of those at the time, it was like 2 or 3 months of like negotiating contracts back and forth and being like, give me my stuff back, send it to a new warehouse. But certainly, you know, at that time, that's what we were doing. The reason I couldn't do it at home, first and foremost, those first 85 units scared me to do it myself, because I had essentially 85 orders overnight and no idea what I was doing. And it took me like 14 hours. And I was like, that is not sustainable. Like, you cannot do that. And if, you know, like, I had an assistant at the time, so she came over and helped me, and it was just like, just torture. Like, we were just like, we can't, no, this is not possible. Looking back on it, totally could have done it for a little while sooner. The other problem was that I had sold my house, so I was like crashing with family. They were giving me like a spare room, and you know, I had already kind of taken over in a way, like this room. Like, I could not show up. Like, 2,000 units of our product is like 2 or 3 pallets worth. So like 4 foot by 4 foot by 4 foot of inventory, and I couldn't just be like, hey, thanks for letting me stay and put my stuff in the garage. Like, they were, you know, they were like, that just was not going to happen. Right. So I had to find a professional place to put it. And I sold my house so that I could invest in my business, because the 2,000 units for manufacturing, to get them manufactured and landed in the United States through customs and everything like that, was $50,000. That's right. Why we were looking for $50,000, right, you know, in the Indiegogo in August. So, yeah, so I, and that was why I was like, we got to sell this stuff, guys. Come on. And I was freaking out, 'cause I was like, I sold my house. Like, guys, we got to make this work. And I think there was this one day, certainly, you know, things we, you know, we would have, you know, kinds of ups and downs. We, you know, we would sell 6 or 7,000. We would have, you know, another month of 2,000, then we would climb to 3, and then we'd go to 4. And it was just this slow growth. So certainly I was seeing progress. Right. And then I was really fortunate, and I honestly only applied because somebody told me, quote, you should apply for this. And I was like, sure. I don't even think I really researched what it was. But I applied for a Mass Challenge, which is a big startup accelerator. One of the, they say they're the world's largest. They have, right, a Boston program. They've got, you know, Mexico, Switzerland, the UK. They've got a few, Israel. And so we applied for their Boston program and ended up getting in. Wow. And essentially of like 1,700 applicants, 100, you pitched, you sent in a written application, which was all these questions, but they give you, I kid you not, like 125 to 250 characters to like describe your market in 250 characters. And I was like, what? Like, right. So we did that, and we made it into the 300 teams made it into like a pitch in person. And I had never pitched before. So I'm like pitching to these judges, and then we were selected as one of the top 128 teams that got office space in Boston. Wow. And it was like an educational thing, because they would have, you know, classes every day, people, experts would come in, and you know, all sorts of networking. Like, got to meet with you know, people at American Airlines, because they had partnerships with these, you know, so we got to meet with them and discuss like, could we bring these on your airplanes? Could we do that? You know, so just a lot of like opportunity with their network, mentors, some in-kind services, all sorts of like awesome stuff. And then through that program, that program kind of blew my mind every day. Like, I would walk in and be like, oh, a bill of materials. That's a thing I should have. It lists everything that's in my product and how much it costs and where I get it. And I don't have that. And I have no idea, like, why I'm paying, you know, $20 per unit for these products. Like, is the foam costing that much, or is it the electron? Like, you know, so it was one of those, oh, but I didn't even know that was a thing, let alone, like, you know, I didn't have it. So I'm learning all this stuff at this program, and just really, like, every day I was just like, my brain would just blow up with like, oh my God. So that's where I learned like marketing was a thing. And I was super fortunate that one of our mentors, Ashley, she was pregnant at the time. She was kind of bored with her startup, because it was turning more into like an actual business. And she had been in the baby space for 4 years with a digital health company. And, you know, I mentioned to her, I'm like, it's very obvious to me that I need help with marketing and sales, and I just have no idea how this works. And you are just such a wealth of knowledge. Like, and we worked together really well, because we had several mentors, but like every time we'd have a meeting with her, her and I just jived really well, and the meetings would always go well. And I asked her, like, would you be willing to come on the team with us? And that was right at the same time that, you know, I got an email from Shark Tank, or from some junior producer at Shark Tank, saying, hey, I kind of crushed your product, or, you know, would you be interested in applying? Give us a call. And I was like, okay.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so that, I think Mass Challenge was the first time I was actually learning about business, and I was learning like I was learning the terminology, and I felt like I was a businesswoman by the time that program was over, because I could talk about net 30 terms. I could talk about, you know, like my BOM, my bill of materials. I could talk about landed costs versus raw costs versus, you know, like I could, I had the terminology to do that. And so, yeah, so got an email, and when Shark Tank emails you, I was like, okay, well, if this is real, I'm calling them. And if it's not, well, I wasted, you know, 15 minutes and I'm probably going to get spammed for the rest of my life. So I called and I had this great conversation with this junior producer, and she said, apply, and got the, you know, written application and the video information, and was like, submit. And I had a week. You had to write stuff down like by hand and like mail it in the mail. And I had 1 week to do that. It took me like the entire week to get together. And then it was a whirlwind, because that was like the end of July. Mass Challenge had been going on for a month, and early September. And the whole time they're telling you, like, that's great. Congratulations. You made it to the next piece. But you might never, you know, you might not make it beyond this, or you might never air, or you might whatever it was. And so I was being flown out in early September for taping. And that was crazy and awesome. Yeah, I just remember, I mean, I can say, like I said, like for Mass Challenge was the reason that I could go in front of those sharks and say what I had to say and answer their questions and be knowledgeable, because my mentors had helped me prepare, but also because I had those terms and those skills, you know, at hand, because I had just learned them. So that was a pretty, I still like have to pinch myself and be like, if I see a video of, you know, some product that Lori Grenier has backed, you know, and I'll be like, oh, that's right, I got to meet her and like hand her my product. Like I forget.
It's amazing. It's an amazing journey. We've got just another minute or two left, and I want to take just a couple minutes too. And I mean, I love hearing your story, and usually we hear all the good stuff, and then I have to dig a little bit and say, yeah, but tell us somewhere along the way where you might have faced a challenge or two in manufacturing, or, you know, with your fundraising. And you've given us a great step-by-step journey along the way, which I love. I love how you presented it. It's really cool. I want to know, with all the things that have happened, can you think of one? It doesn't have to be a big moment, but what is a moment so far that you're just the most proud of, a single moment in everything in your journey so far?
Yeah, so I would certainly say, I mean, standing in front of the sharks and getting multiple offers and walking away with a shake from Robert and just moving forward in that was awesome. Like I felt that was like just so much to me.
It's a big validation for you too, wasn't it? I mean, on this big journey when you've had so many challenges, what a validation to have so many come in. And I've seen that episode and the kind of response you get. And it's nice to get, I mean, there's products that go in that are good ideas even sometimes, just get laughed at in ways that yours wasn't. Yours was respected, and that's a big deal.
Yeah, well, and I think the big thing for me was my mentors were like, you're going to get killed on your valuation. You can't go in asking for $100,000 for 10%. You know, that's $1 million valuation. And they were really like prepping me for that. And I was so fortunate that my patent, like my issued patent came in, you know, like several days before I was flown out there. So that was just super lucky. And then, you know, I think I got floored because some of the offers were like, just came right out, and they were at my asking, and I didn't even mean to. I just couldn't do math fast enough. But you know, I then was like, I didn't want to give up so much my company. So I was like, well, you know, can somebody, and I accidentally changed the value of my company, during my pitch. And it worked out. And I think that all of that was like, wow, like I wanted to say 100,000 for 10% when I, you know, to my mentors, and everyone kind of laughed at me. And then ultimately, like, the sharks didn't laugh, you know. And,
you know, it's one of the first times I was reading up on that. It's one of the few times it's worked to do that. And so, you know, you're in Shark Tank history to be able to raise the valuation in the middle of negotiation and not get laughed at in that way. That's amazing.
I would say that was my intuition, because I had no. It was the same reason, like, you know, at the end of the episode, I kind of threw some shade to one of the sharks jokingly, but I didn't even remember I said it. It was the same thing with that, you know, that CEO of the company, like, well, if you want my product, you're going to have to pay me a lot more for it now. Like I didn't, it was like somebody else was speaking for me. Right. And I wasn't saying anything, but that was a really proud moment. And then certainly beyond that, So I brought Ashley onto the team, and my assistant that I had started working with in 2015 came on as a co-founder as well. And so the three of us were the only people at Tranquilo from September onward. And we were fortunate enough to be winners. There were only 16 cash money, no equity taken winners of Mash Challenge. So
That's
we got $50,000, just cash money that went straight into buying inventory to prepare for the Shark Tank airing. And because the minute I got back from taping, we didn't actually have the product that people saw on the show. That was a prototype based on what we had heard from customers for the first version of our product. And so that was just like mock-ups that were made, you know, in a week here in Boston. It didn't actually really exist. And so we then spent 4 months, I think, top to bottom, changed the logo, pictures, packaging, product, like top to bottom, improve the battery life, change the foam, like you name it. We just essentially rebirthed this company in 5 months. And so when we aired on Shark Tank, it was like, it was such a whirlwind. It was awesome to then see that and then see the response from that, because that show aired and we, you know, Robert and his team were like, you'll, at your price point at $100, you know, you'll be lucky to do a year's worth of inventory in, you know, in the month preceding the show. So we were like, okay, well, 2,000 units. We sold 2,000 units last year. That'd be great.
Right.
Like, I would have been thrilled with 2,000 units in a month, you know, or 2 months. That would have been a huge boost. And we sold 2,000 units overnight.
Wow. That's incredible.
And that was February, and we've sold 10,000 to date now.
Incredible.
So now we've had success, but it's been just in the last, 7 months, 8 months.
An overnight success that's taken since 2011.
Exactly. Isn't that a story?
Yeah, that's amazing. I love your story. You know, we've got just one more minute. Tell us where we can find your product, and then I just want to hear some final advice you give to someone out there that's either on the fence or has an idea or is struggling with their product or just in the iteration process right now or in the development process. Give us your biggest advice to them, and then where can we find your product?
Sure. So my biggest advice is do it. If it is burning in your heart, in your soul, and you're not sure, and everyone thinks you're crazy, and the whole thing, ask yourself, if money were no object, if you were a bajillionaire already, and you knew that whatever you wanted to do, you couldn't fail, what would you do? If your answer is whatever that thing is, then you should do it. But look at it as a step-by-step journey. Look at it as, I'm going to, you know, figure out how things vibrate and cut things apart and do that. Or I'm gonna look at how to do provisional patents today. And just look at one piece, because the next pieces will start to uncover themselves. And every time you hit a brick wall, or at least every time I hit a brick wall, I ended up learning that it was for the best that that happened. And so, honestly, I've learned faith through being a business owner because I've had faith in the process, and I'm thankful for all those obstacles. So trying to kind of turn all that stuff on its head and just think, like, you know, don't try to climb the mountain. You know, don't look at the top of the mountain and be like, I can't do it. Just look at, like, oh, I have to walk, you know, 20 steps today, or 10 steps, or 2 steps. You know, it took, what do we say, 4 years or something, 5 years just to meet it. So, you know, the millions of steps I've taken were easy because I only took it one step at a time. So do it. Do it.
I love that advice. And, you know, one thing that strikes me too is, and this happened in my own journey for a few businesses, is, you know, I didn't know where my resources were, but then, you know, now when I need to build something or do something, I know to go to, I have a network to go to now that they guide me more quickly and they help answer questions, and they save me years sometimes of guesswork, whether it mastermind groups or consultant groups. And, you know, you found a group that really gave you an education as well in the process and saved you who knows how many more years it might have taken and some of the things you were learning if you hadn't gotten that group. So yes, take the journey. I love that advice, and look for those who have done it. Some of the best leaders and most successful people that I know are also people that will invest in others and teach them if they're the right type of person.
Correct. Yeah. And I've sensed from the show, heard from people, I'm more than happy to always talk to people who are interested, you know, who have an idea or want some, you know, some one-on-one guidance or whatnot. I just love hearing from fellow entrepreneurs, fellow inventors. So the way people can find me is nursemelissa@tranquilomat.com. And then to find our product, we're tranquilomat.com. So it's tranquil, T-R-A-N-Q-U-I-L-O. So it's tranquil with an O, matt.com. And then, yeah, my email is nursemelissa@tranquilomat.com. So people can find me there and they can find our product at tranquilomat.com.
Awesome. Great story. Melissa Gerson, founder and CEO of Tranquilo Mat. Thank you again so much for being our guest. And our listeners can go and check out your website and learn more about you. And we look forward to seeing the next great things. I know your journey is just beginning. And you've got some amazing things that are going to continue to happen for you. And I'm glad that the victory and the success is sweet for you because you've actually had such an interesting journey to get there.
Well, thank you for having me, Derek.
We'll talk soon. Thank you, Melissa.
You've been listening to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. This interview was designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be.